Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Lofgren.
Nice to be here.
And the senators are meeting, apparently, the Democratic Senate leaders are meeting to discuss ways to overcome or counter Republican obstruction of particularly Barack Obama's judicial nominees. Recently, Caitlin Halligan, her nomination to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which is a key court that feeds both cases to the Supreme Court and justices to the Supreme Court. She was stymied for a second time by a silent filibuster. And of course, we also witnessed a real filibuster recently with Rand Paul. So there's a bit of history here, Mike, in as much as apparently the younger senators on the Democratic side wanted some serious filibuster reform. And Harry Reid met with Mitch McConnell and came up with some kind of compromise reform. But it looks like the Democrats got taken. They got hosed, didn't they?
Well, that's exactly what it appears to be. Now, Senator Merkley of Oregon was one of the younger senators who were working very hard on real filibuster reform, and he kind of got brushed aside when Senator Reid made that deal with Senator McConnell. And one of the reasons, and it's interesting to note, that Tom Harkin, the senior Democratic senator from Iowa, announced that he would be retiring at the end of his term is he wanted filibuster reform, and he didn't want to hang around forever in an institution where nothing could get done.
Well, the price, though, that the Democrats pay and that the White House pays and is pretty profound. If it's that easy to do a silent filibuster where you just basically say you're going to filibuster without actually having to put skin in the game, and if they can do it repeatedly, particularly on this key court where there are four vacancies, one of which goes back to the Chief Justice John Roberts leaving in 2005, there is a Republican strategy there involved in keeping that court dominated by Republicans. Because the amazing thing is that that court recently ruled that Obama's only means to get around Senate filibusters was recess appointments, and now they've invalidated his recess appointments, and that's going to go to the Supreme Court. So it's an amazing deal for the Republicans to be able to completely stymie the White House without any skin in the game.
Yes, it's a very well-articulated strategy. But people have to understand that it's sort of the strategy that dare not speak its name in public. And the public should also understand that there's filibusters and there's filibusters. I have no objection to some senator getting up a la Mr. Smith goes to Washington and holding the floor for as long as he can to talk about some issue that's troubling him, whether it be Rand Paul on the Republican side or Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side.
Well, he's an independent,
by the
way. But
they cannot explain their strategy to the public, so they just file a motion and very quietly, and nothing happens as a result. And people should understand this is a strategy to invalidate the results of popular elections. I think we had a referendum on the whole issue, for instance, of Dodd-Frank, whether banks should be regulated. I don't think Dodd-Frank went nearly far enough, but such provisions as are in it that help rein in Wall Street, Republicans are preventing from being implemented by simply filibustering nominees to positions like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Richard Cordray's been waiting forever for that position.
Right. Well,
Mike, we decided in the election that we were not going to have laissez-faire a la Mitt Romney. The public stuck with Mr. Obama, who signed the legislation. He signed Dodd-Frank. So one would think, give him the benefit of the doubt. And if the nominee is not tainted ethically or not otherwise disqualified, Mr. Obama's choice should be respected.
Well, I was going to say that in the hearings that took place on Tuesday before the Senate Banking Committee, Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, she, rather than waste her time interviewing the witness, Cordray, who's testified on numerous occasions, she turned her ire on her Republican colleagues and basically laid it on the line that you guys are just obstructing, this is just filibuster, and frankly, you're working for the big banks at the expense of ordinary consumers who have been ripped off on their mortgages, their credit cards, and their student loans.
Well, she's one of the rare cases where filibustering a nominee meant the filibusters didn't get quite what they bargained for. Now they have to deal with her as an equal.
Well, she's, why aren't there more Democrats like her? Because the whole point is, and it goes back to your book, Mike Lofgren, The Party is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. Now, they are being useless. They look pathetic, and so does Harry Reid, for making this worthless deal with Mitch McConnell and then having McConnell slap him in the face no sooner than the ink is dry. And we know what their strategy is, and we know that the younger Democratic senators are saying we've got to get real here, but I take it the reason why Harry Reid and the company are nervous about what they call the nuclear option, which is demanding you either stand and deliver in terms of a filibuster, or we have just majority rule, that's going to come back to bite them if the Republicans take over. So walk us through that logic.
Well, he got, he being Reid, not only got snookered by his opponents, the Republicans, but he's angered a lot of Democrats in the process. Now, I can imagine he and a number of the other senior Democrats, particularly ones in swing states, know that there are quite a number of Democratic Senate seats up in 2014, a lot more than Republican seats, and last election of a two-term president typically is not very favorable for the president's party in Congress. So it is possible that Republicans could win a net six seats and take control, and they are terrified of setting a precedent with the nuclear option and simply doing away with the filibuster period. So, it is a little ironic considering that when Republicans take over in a legislature, as we've seen in many state legislatures, they have no hesitation whatever in passing the most far-reaching proposals without any regard to, well, what will the other side do to us if we lose control? Once they get control, they do everything they can. They move heaven and earth to pass their agenda. As you can see, Democrats are much more split-minded because they have a theoretically progressive agenda, many of them, but they're also beholden to the same moneyed interests that fund the Republicans. And this makes them kind of schizophrenic.
So what is the alternative then between the nuclear option that could come back to bite the Democrats and this useless deal that Harry Reid made with Mitch McConnell that Mitch McConnell has slapped him in the face with?
I think it should be incumbent on the party or the individuals who are filibustering to hold the floor. And I think holds on nominations, be they executive or judicial, should not be anonymous. If we're a democracy, things should be transparent. That would give the minority certainly adequate protection, but it would not allow them to ignore the results of elections, and essentially, rather than having a majoritarian body, the way the House of Representatives has always been set up to be, it's no longer a body involved in consensus. It's a minoritarian body where the minority gets its way. It can't pass legislation, but it can kill every single initiative of the majority if it cares to.
Well, we've had that system here in the state of California for decades, where the minority party, the Republicans, essentially ruled in Sacramento through the minority by the requirements of these supermajorities, these two-thirds majorities, which is the same as the filibuster. And my understanding is the roots of that supermajority go back to Jim Crow and slavery in the South.
Right. We have to look at the Senate as an institution that's almost designed for that. They pride themselves as the world's greatest deliberative body and so forth. My rather cynical appraisal of that would be the same as Winston Churchill when he became First Lord of the Admiralty. I think it was in 1911 or something like that. And he took over the Royal Navy and wanted to reform it. And, of course, the admirals were aghast. They talked about the traditions of the Royal Navy. And he said, the traditions of the Royal Navy are rum, sodomy, and the lash. If you look at the traditions of the Senate, it's slavery, Jim Crow, and McCarthyism. Not a very good trio. For most of its history, it has been involved in upholding either slavery or Jim Crow. It suffered its last gasp, you know, within living memory. It needs reform.
So is the reform then, and I don't understand why Harry Reid didn't listen to the junior Democratic senators, if they were proposing what you're suggesting, which is that you've got to put skin in the game with these filibusters, you've got to be able to stand up there, identify yourself and identify the issue that you're making a stand over, and that there can't be secret holds on either judicial or political appointments.
Well, absolutely. I guess tenure there tends to breed timidity. And right now, we don't need timidity, given all the problems this country has.
So what do you think, then, is going to happen with these meetings that are taking place? I imagine Harry Reid's getting an earful. Basically, the junior guys are probably saying to him, look, you got had, and why didn't you listen to us? And maybe let's do what we proposed. Now, I guess the problem with the filibuster, and we saw the recent filibuster by Rand Paul, which garnered a lot of sympathy on the left and the right, curiously enough, he's kind of a libertarian zealot in many ways. So wouldn't that system then favor the person who's most prone to grandstand?
It may very well, but it's also, of course, for human reasons, self-limiting. It's only on as long as you manage to hold the floor.
Hold your bladder, I guess, yeah.
Precisely. I was implying that.
Right. Well, I'm a little crude, I must say.
That said, you have to talk about something when you're on the floor. And he garnered a lot of attention when he was doing that because it was so out of the way and unusual these days for a filibuster actually to be conducted in the old-fashioned way of getting up and speaking. The public paid attention to it, and he had to have something to say, something relevant to the case he was making. Whereas with these secret filibusters and secret holds, people doing them don't have to explain them, and that's precisely the point. They don't have to explain them means they get off the hook because they can't explain why they are throwing sand in the gears of the democratic process.
Well, your new book, Mike Lofgren, The Party is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, says it all. And I know that the Republicans are crazy, and another word for crazy is determined. It's a more politer way to put it, that they get their way, even if they have these tantrums like spoiled children, they still get their way because the Democrats fold. So I'm trying to understand the psychology here, how a determined minority can roll a feckless majority, and why it is that you have this disparity with the Republicans, who essentially are doing the bidding of the billionaires and the bankers. That seems to be what they're all about. They go to the mat for the billionaires and the bankers, and the Democrats are supposed to be the champions of working Americans in the middle class, and they don't seem to stand up for the majority of the country with the same zeal that the Republicans stand up for the 1%.
I would say there's more than one reason for that. Partly, as we've discussed, it's structural. If we had a parliamentary system, as in Britain, there would be no question of this. It's the majority carries the day, and that's that. Okay, we're stuck with the Senate, but there's other reasons as well that explain Reid's and some others' hesitation before trying to abolish the filibuster or reform it. And one of them is historical. I would say after losing the 88 presidential election, the third one in a row they lost, the Democrats retooled themselves and made themselves more of a business-friendly party. And they've been very ambivalent ever since then about who they are. And if you've noticed, I think this is pretty common. A Republican office holder has no hesitation of calling himself conservative. In fact, he'll say he's more conservative than anybody else. He's more conservative than the other candidate, and on and on and on.
He's severely conservative.
Whether or not the public at large, never mind the primary voter, but the public at large may not necessarily identify with conservative issues on an issue-for-issue basis. But he will proudly call himself a conservative. How many Democratic office holders will say they are proud liberals, including our president?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Mike Loughran, and I thank you for joining us here today.
Well, it was good to be here.
Again, I've been speaking with Mike Loughran, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.